Hello and welcome to the LRM podcast, sponsored by Adrian Flux Insurance. I'm Martin Dominey, and Steve's not here because I've come to visit my friend Drew. How you doing?
Hello, how are we doing, man?
Very good, very good. Good to be back in your unit, which is packed, well, packed with cool stuff, really. There's always something to look at, isn't there?
Try and keep it cool. It's got to be cool.
Definitely. And Last time I was here, the sheet was over your Series 2A challenge motor. I'm pleased to see that you've pulled it off for me to have a poke around today, because it is probably one of the most highly modified series Land Rovers in the country, it's fair to say.
It wasn't supposed to be that way.
Right.
That's just how it happened.
Okay.
Things broke and fell off. And then that's what we ended up doing. Like I said to you about the floor.
Yeah.
I got pissed off with it floating, so we cut the floor out.
But it hasn't always been a motorsport vehicle, has it? It started off...
No, it was a daily driver. I used to drive it to work. We put 6 square foot of steel on it, the chassis and the bulkhead outside my terraced house in Northampton. That finally gave up, and then we put another chassis on it. I was doing, shall we say, just green laning. Let's just leave it green laning. And then we started looking at play days and some competition stuff. And it sort of just progressed, really. You know, when there was an issue, instead of just fixing it, let's over-engineer so you don't have that issue.
Right.
And that's why it ended up looking like that.
It does look... It's a formidable thing. I was going to say, I don't remember it being that tall last time I came here, but it's on Volvo portal axles.
Portal axles, steel 2.25 petrol, Roland ACR, everything. I can remember the day he took me for a spin in his series, and I've never seen Drew driving like it before or since. The bloke was a genius. He's a genius. Steel 4-speed gearbox.
Still standard series box?
Standard series box.
Wow.
It has a sort of a home-built Jag clutch.
Right.
Because Luke wasn't around then.
Luke had
We kept getting a lot of clutch slip. Don't know why. So now it has like a stupidly strong pressure plate, which we needed a Puma spring for.
Right.
But that was when Pumas were new.
Got you. Do the portal axles, so for those who might not be in the know about portal axles, they're essentially your traditional straight axle, but they have a gearbox at each end which drops the drive for the wheel down.
Yeah.
So you get more ground clearance under the main body of the axle, but also it reduces the gearing, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, there's two types of Volvo drop boxes. There's a higher range and a lower range. I couldn't tell you what I've got. I think I've got the lower one.
Right.
So it does, even with the ACR stuff, it sets off like a scalding
cat. Yeah.
would leave Craig's TD5 at the lights,
right?
But for about 3 car lengths,
run out of puff.
and then so it gets scary over 50 because it's 7 foot tall, as you say.
It's a lot taller than I remember. But what size? It's got Super Swamper boggers on it, hasn't it?
They're the ultimate tire, aren't they? There's nothing. I don't think there's anything because other than Swampers, them. Boggers are just so cool. They're terrible on side slopes.
Are they?
And they're terrible on the road. There's no sips in them. Look.
I was going to say, they look just a bit...
drifting everywhere.
They're sort of almost, I suppose you could say, similar to a bar grip in that the tread literally goes sideways and nowhere else. There's no, like, directional...
They're for bogs.
Yeah. The clue's in the name.
And obviously, Mack... What are they? Mack 8 spokes?
I was going to ask about
that. Then Matt Lee made them when he was making wheels.
They look almost like a mini light, don't they, with that massive centre?
Well, they were Mac 5s, but because that's got more studs.
Yeah.
What has it got? 8 studs, I think.
Yeah.
So it has 8 spokes. And then obviously the Gone Too Far kit.
See, I was going to ask you about that because this is all from an era. This is why I get so excited about this stuff, these proper old school challenge trucks, is because when I was younger, buying the Land Rover magazines, buying Total Off-Road, I was so... This was the absolute pinnacle. It was so aspirational. Like, they're still Land Rovers, but they're just amplified. Everything about them is amplified, and that's what I really love about
them. So for me, it was Pirate 4x4.
Okay.
So back in the day, there was forums, and Pirate 4x4 was a website, American, obviously. So this is before King of the Hammers. That's over 20 years ago.
Time flies around fun.
So, and I was watching on there what the Yanks were doing on the Rubicon with leaf springs.
Right.
And this had got leaf springs and everyone was moving over to coils and spending 30 grand on TD5 tray backs and everything. And my logic was this, well, I don't think we've exhausted the potential of the leaf spring yet, looking at what they'd done. So this was more inspired from, like you say, early 2000 Rubicon stuff. And the Gone Too Far kit was a chap named Nigel, who invented and started sourcing these revolver shackles. So it's got these revolver shackles on the back, which are like an over center extending shackle. And then on the front, you can see those pivots.
Yes.
It's got like a pivot in the dumb iron.
I'll put a couple of pictures up.
So it's still on leafs, yep. But it has true 12 inches of travel.
Right.
In each corner.
Crikey. It's significant, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like the idea of the revolver shackle and the like the scissor shackle on the back is that when you are at suspension droop, the back of the spring can essentially move away from the chassis, so you keep the wheel on.
I don't know whether they still do them. They used to do them for coil springs. There was a dislocation.
Oh, dislocation cones.
Similar sort of thing, but it stays connected.
Right. Design development engineering are making them again now, I think.
For the hook on that catches your spring.
No, for leafers.
Oh, right. Yes.
Brian Bush. Yeah.
And my old mate, Mr. Taylor.
Robert Taylor.
Yes.
Yes, good chap.
Yeah. Well, again, I mean, this could have had D2 axles, but I had a chap in Northampton who'd done very similar to this, and they came up for sale at the right time, and
right.
I didn't have to import these or anything.
I also remember a feature in
America. They came from Malaysia.
Really?
There was a chap in Malaysia, Landy Shah, and he realised that you could throw them almost literally straight underneath a 109 or an 88.
Right.
The diff nose is the same length, so you don't need prop shafts. There's even Land Rover. There are 11-inch drum components in these drums.
That's mad.
So there's Land Rover stuff in the drums. And obviously they were set up for leaf springs. The spring perch was in the right place, so they just fitted straight underneath. So these were very popular in the Rainforest Challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So the axles are Malaysian inspired and the suspension's American inspired.
It's a cultural mishmash.
Well, isn't that what it's about, I suppose, really?
Well, take the best elements.
Cherry picking ideas and
definitely tweaking
them a bit.
It's a really, really cool thing. And I hope you mentioned you've had it running again.
Yeah, we went through it all. I decided to do Car SOS before I needed Car SOS. So we went through it all, me and Danny Cartwright, predominantly Danny. And it's ready to rock and roll, but we've just got a couple of oil leaks. And then I've going to decide, it hasn't moved for close to 10 years.
I was going to say, how long has it been off the road?
I think it's just easy if you just round it up to say 10.
Right.
But I don't know what I'm going to do with it. I won't be competing with it anymore. I'm not a big fan of the Raptor paint, but I think that ticks all the boxes. I haven't got to rub it down or anything like that.
Sure.
And limestone has always been my favourite. And I've always wanted it limestone for as long as I've had it. And we had access to cheap black paint.
Right, okay.
So it went black.
I was going to say, for people who aren't looking at the social post that I'll put up with the podcast, it's currently black, but it's got like chrome graphics on it.
That was a bit of chrome wrap that I had left over from something. And I thought, well, let's do some sort of chrome wrap camouflage.
It looks wicked. I think it's important that because I'm sure there's more of these sort of Land Rovers from this sort of era dotted about the country in people's yards and that.
Oh, yeah.
They need dragging out and showing off because I, like I say, I lose my mind with excitement when I see them from this time. And I'm sure other people around my age would be exactly the same. It's like, they jump off the page of the magazine. You can actually see them in real life.
Mm,
you should bring it to Fest.
It's on the cards. Like I said, we've just got literally more EP coming out than what went in.
Mm.
So,
got you. Well, it's amazing, really, that it's still on a 2.25 petrol and a standard series box. But yeah. I suppose the portal axles with the gears in the ends must take quite a lot of stress out of it.
Takes loads of strain out of it. Yeah, I mean, the shafts as well, these Volvo half shafts, I'll blow your mind.
Go on then.
They run backwards.
Are the diffs upside down so that the portals drive forwards then?
In a Land Rover sense, yes.
Right, okay.
Right, so unless you knew that.
Yeah.
Yeah, the car's going forwards, but the half shafts are going backwards.
Got you.
And then because they're two gear portals, the bottom gear on the bottom of the portal is going forwards.
Got you. Right, yeah, you'd have to know that, otherwise you'd be
fourth gear. But the shafts are mental.
Yeah.
They're not quite Coke can size, but they're massive.
You wouldn't snap on.
Well, it's touch wood.
No, it's an awesome thing. I'm so pleased to be
here. I've grenaded the rear, the reverse lay shaft. That was the Achilles heel. I could make one of them in four pieces. That was
right.
That was quite, because all the train, all the drivetrain, all the stress is going to go somewhere. And I suppose those series gearboxes aren't the strongest thing. So it just used to, you have to be very careful in reverse.
Right.
But yeah, she got a couple of trophies.
I was going to say, talk to us about what was it actually like competing back in the day? Because it was like the most popular form, I suppose.
My first winch challenge trophy was 1999.
Right.
And you had an M8000 on the front. You had SAGs or SAT tyres. Then people started getting flash and putting Petlers on.
Oh, the 900 bus.
Yes. Yeah. And then the Simex came along.
Yeah.
And it was great back in the early days. It was kind of legal carnage in the fact that it wasn't like the off-piste off-roading. It was legitimate.
Yeah, you were on a private
lap. But how can you explain it? It wasn't a sport as such. I don't think it was a sport. There was no co-driver running around.
Right.
There was, but it wasn't anything like it is today.
Yes.
You know, I have so much respect for the lads that winch challenge now.
Right.
It's a completely different, another level to what we used to do back in the day. I wouldn't stand a chance. I couldn't do it now anyway. I'm too old. But it was, we used to have to do like making bridges and pulling oil drums across and, you know, just getting from point A to point B.
Right.
Rather than getting punches.
Yeah. So for those of you perhaps not familiar with how winch challenges work, you essentially, as you just mentioned, with the punches, you get a scorecard, don't you?
Yeah.
You've got to make your way to some of the hardest point areas to get to on the site. You punch your card and off you go, and whoever's got the most punches at the end of the day wins.
Yeah.
But the terrain is like, you know, like 4 foot deep water and vertical slopes, and
it's undrivable.
Yeah,
it's literally undrivable, and that's what the winches do.
Yes,
you know, and I totally appreciate everything that they do and all the skills and abilities that winching does, because obviously moving on forwards now to more the unlimited racing stuff, you having had that background, you can see other lines.
Right,
you know, you've got a driving line, but then you've also got the winching line. You know, so if the car's stuck on the driving line, then I'm going to just use the rope and pull rope. So that sort of foundation was brilliant. But I decided I'd had enough dangling.
Okay.
There's only so much hanging off a winch rope you could do. It's the anxiety and the, you know, and you're looking at where you're going to go if that winch snaps, and they do. I'd had enough of dangling. And I mean that in a respectful sense. It's not like it became too extreme for me.
Right, okay.
Right,
is that as the vehicles got more away? Because for me, I'll be honest, I kind of lost interest in it after they stopped looking like Land Rovers, because I always aspired to own a real tricked up off-roader. That was really what got me going. And then when they sort of went across to the buggy, I'm not disinterested in it. I didn't keep up with it as much as I did.
Well, it's like everything, I think, with motorsport. It becomes very specialised.
Yeah.
You know, so an out-and-out winch challenge truck like Anthony Warfield, you know, that's it's an amazing bit of kit. I just realised I wasn't going to be able to do it, and I'd sort of retired. And as I said to you earlier, it was the regulations. There was lots of regulations came in.
This is interesting because a good friend of mine, Phil Griffiths, rallies a series Land Rover, and he's always quick to point out perhaps the bureaucracy and the red tape and the not the illogical decisions made by some of the governing bodies. But thankfully, you're counteracting that with what.
We're trying with Nora, just making good decisions and not dragging out the decisions. You don't need two committees to make a decision. It's basically what the insurance company thinks, so, or what an engineer thinks. So yeah, as I said to you earlier, I remember going to my first ARC trial.
Yeah.
And was told I couldn't compare. This is a new customer to them.
Yeah.
You know, full of enthusiasm, just rebuilt the Land Rover, looking for something to do with it. Went to an ARC trial and was told I couldn't come in because I didn't have enough leafs in my springs.
Right, okay.
And that just set me off then.
It's disheartening because you should be welcoming newcomers to the sport and showing them the way and giving advice and all that stuff. And to just be told, no, sorry.
Massively. You know, that barrier to entry of going through scrutineering where you've done all this work and you get there and there's somebody who basically is a block.
Yeah.
Don't know whether you're going to do it or not. You know, it's not conducive to new customers, is it? Also, we're trying to get new people into the sport, motivate people. You know, we're under a lot of pressures for environmental reasons, some of them rightly so, you know, and the last thing you want to do is put obstacles in the way of people. We're trying to make it cooler. You know, if you look at skateboarding and BMXing, then they don't have rules.
No.
You know, and I know rules are there to keep us safe and set us free, and I'm not saying anything against that. As I said to you earlier, I think the safety equipment as it is now is spot on. But
what you're doing with Nora, and I think rightly so, is you're sort of taking the nitpicky detail out, and you're basically putting the onus, the responsibility of being safe on the competitor,
which is
exactly what needs to happen, because then it's in their interest to be safe.
Scrutineers don't have X-ray eyes.
No.
You know, you can't tell whether that weld's any good from looking at it. The only time you'll tell when a weld fails is when it fails, you know. So what about the cars that are stored outside?
Yeah.
You know, the corrosion that's building up inside these cages. And to me, it just seems a much better idea to just go, right, this is our regulation. This is our duty of care. This is what you need to comply to. Do you comply to those regulations? Yes, I do. Okay, crack on. Why? The scrutineer as such, or the tech inspector, should be there just as a backer. You know, is your helmet still in date? Yes. You know, have you got your spill kit? Yes. You know, just as a help rather than a block.
Sure.
That's what I think anyway.
It's the right way to do it because, like you say, it's their responsibility. They'll feel the responsibility and they're more likely to do things properly.
Bit of a tangent. We were off there. But like I said, that's why I went from ARC winch challenging stuff to more unlimited King of the Valleys type stuff, because there was less regulations.
Right.
There's still regulations, but it's up to you. You self-certify, basically.
We're proud to partner with Adrian Flux, an insurance broker that specialises in covering all types of Land Rovers, including classic, ex-military, modified and Q-plated models. Adrian Flux offers a range of optional extras to make the policy your own and can provide cover for off-roading, green laning, agreed value and build-up cover. Plus, they even offer a discount of up to 15% for Owners Club members. Simply search Adrian Flux Land Rover Insurance for more information or call them directly on 0344 728 0417 for a quote.
I was going to say, so behind me is your race car.
Yeah.
Tell us, to someone who's perhaps not as I say, as up to date with off-road racing as they probably should be when they came and saw you. Talk to us about that. It's tube frame. It's got Volvo T5 petrol engine. Which
yeah, so it was built 2013 for King of the Valleys. It was a 300 TDI D2 axles, HP22. It's just progressed from there. Same sort of logic, really, when it's broke. The 300 TDI, I proved a point. You could get round and race or do the speech marks with a 300 TDI, but it wasn't a racing engine.
Right.
I found that I was using all of it.
Okay.
So
fairly highly tuned, I assume.
It was highly tuned, yeah. I mean, it got VNT and fuel pump stuff. It was had new governor springs in it and all the stuff that you're not supposed to touch.
Right.
It squatted when the turbo kicked in. But I had it off the road for COVID and put that Volvo 850 T5 in it, which I don't think anyone has ever mated one of those to that gearbox before.
No, so you said you got the ZF.
Yeah, it's still, there's a big debate about whether I've done the right thing and only time will tell because there are other gearboxes. But I had two top flight Ashcroft big pump 24 internals, and I didn't want to mess around with the floor, change the prop shafts,
right,
remount everything. So I just thought instead of having an adapter, I'd make a bell housing. So right, we made a bell housing from a 960 Volvo, the front part of a 960 Volvo bell housing and the back part of a 300 TDI bell housing, and it has the medium size torque converter in it, which there's like a fag paper.
Right. Oh, right.
Around the outside of it.
Crikey.
It just fits.
So, yeah, I was going to say that gearbox would have been basically where yours is a heavily upgraded version of like the auto box you got in Disco One.
Yeah, Disco One P38. It's from, I think, I glaze over when Mr. Ashcroft starts telling me, awesome, but I just don't know enough. I leave that to him.
Right.
But I've got a feeling that's from 4.6 Thor, right. P38.
So, yeah, it would have been a 24 with the electronic control.
So you've done it again.
Sorry.
I have no idea.
Sorry.
that one.
Here's a question then. What made you choose a Volvo T5?
Always wanted that engine.
Really?
I had the saloon car and it was amazing. The car itself, we'd just go places all over the UK and you'd step out of it and it was like you'd just step down the road. You'd literally just go down the shops.
Right.
Unbelievable bit of kit. It would destroy tyres if you weren't careful. And I was a big fan of that engine. There is a lot of fans out there for that engine. The BT25 something or other. And I just always wanted them.
Right.
The noise.
Yeah, five-cylinder noise.
And I knew it would be... I didn't want to go V8. There's a lot of arguing to say, you know, I could have put a TD5 in there. That would have been ample. But they're heavy compared to that, which is all aluminium.
Right.
I could have done the LS, GM gearbox route and everything. But like I said, I had a load of spares. So, and it was just a personal project. That's what it is for me. The racing is important and part of it and why we do it. But I enjoy the tinkering.
Yeah, sure.
So, you know, in some respects, I like it when I break it because then I know I've got to go and tinker now.
Put it in the shed and do some
exactly. Stuff. So it was a personal project. I just wanted to put that engine. Nobody had done it before. And it's just under 400 brake.
Right.
It's literally twice the 300 TDI.
I bet.
So 7,500 RPM. So that's twice the power. The torque is similar.
Right.
And in a different place. But yeah, so it's a completely new animal.
I was going to say, because obviously it looks...
In COVID, I put twice the power in it, twice the rev range. Changed the braking, so we got twice the braking, did the first race, changed all the seating position.
Right.
So that's all different. So it's a new car, really.
It looks
to drive.
Right. I was gonna, you keep it in fantastic condition, considering what it does.
Yeah. I just feel as though it's a race car. You know, you have to keep it clean. You don't want to be diving underneath that and have half of, you know, some quarry fall on your face. So it gets jet washed in three stages, where I take it apart and then jet wash it again and take more off and then jet wash it again.
You can see it.
It's just important. You need to see stuff. You need to see if there's any cracks anywhere, if any joints are going. You just got to keep it clean. It's a different kettle of fish.
This is on D2 axles, isn't it?
D2, Ashcroft, everything.
So, yeah, Land Rover box, Land Rover axles. Yeah. So it's still got the element of green oval in it.
All the leaks come from the Land Rover bits.
Good to know. Yeah.
Just so you know, yeah.
You don't want to get too far in.
Exactly.
But I was going to say, you're right off road.
Yes, that's what pays for it all anyway.
Which does your heavy duty acoustic matting.
Yes.
How long have you been doing that? And how did that come about?
So this.
Oh, so really?
I was driving this to work.
The series.
The series.
Yeah.
All weathers, as you do. And I worked at a place where we made tractor cabs. So I was responsible for a Caterpillar wheel loader cab. Rops and fops testing I've done. Engineering.
Sure.
Just leave it at that. And we bought the company, the group of companies, bought the company that made these mats. And we were taken to the company and we were given a spiel. And the idea was, is that when we got a new job for a new cab, whether it was Caterpillar, JCB, John Deere, we could then liaise with that company's design team and we could actually produce the cab enclosure and the mats for them.
Right.
And we even started doing some plastic. But I was sat there listening to this bloke go on about his matting and everything. And I have to say, it was a weird moment because it was almost like the room went quiet. And I just thought, hang on a minute, why aren't those mats in that?
Yes.
It seemed as though it was a massive gap.
Right.
I think largely because Land Rover's engineers at that time were automotive engineers, whereas the lads that I knocked about with were off-highway market engineers, Diggers, Tractors, JTBs. And for that gang, it was a fait accompli. It was a complete no-brainer. These mats are what's in every single Digger and Tractor excavator.
Right.
So then I went home, did a bit of a business plan, actually spoke to LRO.
Yes.
And they had some very helpful market information. I did a business plan, went to the group of company, the group, the chairman of this £70 million group and said, look, I've had this idea. Can I do it? And he went, well, it's not really of any interest to us, but you can do it if you want. And that's when it all started. That's when the soundproof matting systems. And I think it's nearly 25 years now.
Crikey.
It's a nice little niche market. I am not minted in the slightest, but it means they've always said, don't they, turn your hobby into your business or your passion or whatever. And that's what it enabled me to do. You know, I don't have a huge amount of money. I've got a 3-bed semi, but we can do podcasts on any random Friday.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I can come in here and do tinkering. And to me, that was the life balance.
Yeah, I totally get it. And I think it's, if you've not seen one of Drew's matting systems in person, go to any Land Rover event and you will. I think I've had at least one set off you, possibly two. I put one in my white 110 when I had that. And it just makes such a difference, especially...
I hate selling them in the truest sense of the word.
Really?
When someone says, well, does it make any difference? I'm like, no. You know, for me, it's just... I was in exactly the same position as everyone who's bought a Land Rover and gone, surely there's something better than... I remember an article from Frank Elson.
Oh, yes.
And he did a piece and he said something like, the only thing you can put on the floor of a Land Rover was a layer of newspaper, a layer of carpet, and then a rubber mat. You change the newspaper weekly, the carpet monthly, and the rubber mats annually. And I was like, there's got to be... He's right. But there has to be something better from that. And then, as I said, every single modern digger excavator, it's not a Chelsea truck thing. If people want carpet, that's their thing. Fine. You know, it's not that. This is for... This is basically, if you agree with the logic that a Defender has more in common with a grey Fergie than it does with a Mark III Cortina.
Yeah.
Then...
Which, like it or not, it does.
It does. Then having a tractor mat in it is...
Yeah.
The way forward.
Definitely. 100%.
And as I said, I hate selling them, but when you supply someone and they... You see them afterwards and they're like, bloody hell.
Yeah.
You know. Well, why have I had to put up with Land Rovers for so long with that?
As I said, I've fitted at least one of yours. I'm sure I had one year before that. But they're such a well-made, close-fitting, moulded matting. Heavy rubber matting.
Polyurethane.
Is it polyurethane?
Super dense polyurethane.
Right. And it just, even like the white 110 I come with, mould that time to pick a couple of sets up with, that was a county station wagon. It should have been quite nice inside. But the carpet was, you know, like 25, 30 years old. It was all gone damp and stinky and discoloured. And ripping all that out, put something fresh in, it just made, you know, it was so much nicer.
I did it myself. Not only with this one. I mean, that one, that's Matt's system in there, number two or number three.
In the series.
In there, yeah. But my next door neighbour bought a series. He wasn't used to Land Rovers. I saw... A load of potential, galvanized chassis, five bearing, you know, disc brakes and all this sort of stuff. But someone had carpeted it.
Right.
And you open the door and it just stunk a damp.
Yeah.
And my next door neighbour, he was not sure. And then I just said to him, well, if you don't have it, I'm having it. Because I know all we need to do is rip all that carpet out, put one of these in, and you've got a top spec Series 3, parabolics, LPG, electronic ignition. It might have even had power steering, I can't remember. But it just the smell of the carpet, the Legionnaires and the Listeria and everything. You know. So yeah, I'm over the moon with it. I'm very happy when someone has the confidence in me to buy one. The vast majority of them come back and go, you were right. You
know? Yeah.
It's 32 kilograms.
Yes, I can remember.
You can't get near it with Dynamat.
Right.
Dynamat really is an automotive product. You know, like Fuzz Townsend, when they put it in underneath the car and everything, that's just brilliant. That's what it's for. It's also good as a complementary product. So you could put it in your roof, in your door panels and all that sort of stuff. But it's just not up to the job for the floor.
Right.
Of a Land Rover.
Yeah, it's that. I remember you showing me last time I came here, you had a square of Dynamat, and I think there was some panel that you might have even been
probably on the back of that.
Could well have been, yeah. And you rattled it, you tapped it, and you could hear it echo and reverb.
Yeah.
You put the Dynamat on it, and then it deadened it.
Yeah.
That, as you said, your floor, where your gearbox and engine are inches away from it,
yeah,
you know, thrashing away as you try and make progress through whatever.
Yeah.
It probably, you know, Dynamat's thin, isn't it? It's not going
to... So there's different types of noise. And as you said about reverberation, and I don't want to bore people with it, but realistically, the only way to stop any noise is deadening, is dampening, is density.
Right.
So... Foam, you'll see people talk about foam, and foam, open cell, closed cell, that's a debate as well. And yes, open cell foam is better, but that works for reflective sound. So say if you was in a recording studio and you wanted a sound wave to not bounce off a wall, then that's when you put your eggshell.
Yes. Yeah.
Like egg foam. Right?
Got you.
So foam works, but literally only by adding density.
Right.
So the fact that you've got foam there is better than having nothing, because you've added something. So foam isn't very dense, though. So there's no way, shape, or form. Density, weight is what you need. And, you know, but Dynamat's good, but it's just, it's better on other panels.
Got you.
Plus the fact, with Dynamat, when you've stuck it all down, how do you get to your clutch?
Yeah, you've got to be a bit selective about where
you put it. Yeah. So then you'll have gaps, noise gaps and things like that. Or you can cover the inside, and there's clips on YouTube where bods are using CO2 fire extinguishers and dry ice and stuff to try and get it off.
Chop it off, yeah.
Whereas ours, you just lift it out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's not a panacea, but it just sorts the floor out.
I remember, actually, you jogged my memory years ago, up to the end of Defender production, which, can you believe, is 10 years ago now.
Oh, mad, isn't it? Yeah.
A lot of our customers at the dealer who otherwise owned Range Rovers and things like that were coming in and going, do you know what? Defender's going to come to an end. I'm going to buy one, either as an investment or a weekend car.
Yeah.
And you had to, like, we would get warranty come in, well, it's leaking water into the footwell, this has happened, that's happened, it rattles, blah blah blah, and you go through to the sales team out the front and you want to nut them and say, can you please tell these customers that have spent $100,000 on a Range Rover that a Defender is not the same thing,
it's different. Yeah,
you almost need like a disclaimer, because they're not the same.
I mean, like
the same with a roof.
Think about everything we know. Spitfire metal, spot welds on the outside, you know, there's like the roof is like a colander.
Yeah.
You know, it was designed on a beach after the war to do a job. It shouldn't, in my opinion, it should have gone ages ago. I'm glad that it didn't, you know, but when, especially when your period, you know, when you're at the dealers and you've got them parked next to Range Rover and stuff, and it just didn't make sense.
No.
You know, it was a farm truck.
Exactly. It was interesting that obviously Defender sales and the region, that, as well as legislation.
Charlie Fawcett bought them all.
Yeah. I know. I need to go and see him, actually. I need to give him a bell. It'd be good to have him on. It was funny, as I was saying, like the they all sort of treat you PDI the odd one here and there. You'd see him get dropped off and, you know, that was kind of like day to day. And then towards the end there was this influx like of people, well-to-do people who had other cars, going, oh, I'm gonna have one of them and I'll pop it away.
And they're not wrong, you know, it shouldn't leak.
Yeah,
you know, it shouldn't be noisy, but they just are. This is different.
We had a 110 Hi-Cat delivered and it had swarf in the back of the tub. Like from the factory, and for whatever reason, I guess the valeters didn't, you know, detail the tub, if you know, they did the cab and whatever else. Customer rejected it, because it had rusty swarf in it.
Yeah.
Like, it's terrible, but you've got to be realistic.
When you that period of time when you was in the dealers, my ex fiance, I'd send her in there just to ask why, what were these marks on the side? The spot welds, like, there's nothing else in the dealers, I got exposed spot welds.
Look down the side of it and it's like,
why has it got this, like, chicken pox, you know? Yeah, well, they just do that. That's part of it, you know what I mean?
It's, yeah.
Love them. Absolutely love them. But it isn't car, is it?
No, of course it isn't, no. And to be fair, that's why people got very upset about when Grenadier came out, because that was obviously... It's never going to be... If it's, you know, it followed in the Defender's footsteps fairly closely, it's going to be fairly horrible to drive on the road.
Yeah, seating position's terrible as well. I'm a fan of the Grenadier, more so than the new Defender.
Okay.
Only because if I put a new Defender in front of my 80-year-old mother, she would not know it's a Defender.
Okay.
It's a disco 6 or 7. And it's very petty, but the square lights, it just, there wasn't enough styling cues went over to the new Defender for it to be called the Defender.
Got you.
Love it. We've done them. We've done the experiences in them. They're very capable. Look at the Dakar. It's winning stages in the Dakar.
Dakar's on as we speak.
Unbelievable, right? But I'm just hung up with the Defender name.
Yeah.
Bearing in mind that that's a Defender. You know, maybe they should have called it something different. And because the examples would be, like you say, the Grenadier, or even the Bronco.
Yeah.
Look at the Ford Bronco.
See the new Land Cruiser.
The new Land Cruiser. Like I said, going back to my mother, if I put a Beetle in front of her, one of those, she'd know it was a Beetle.
Yeah.
But Fiat 500.
Yeah.
You'd know it was a Fiat 500. I will never forget the first time I saw one of the new Defenders coming towards me. And I looked at it and went, do you know what? I do like a Disco 6. Disco 5, sorry. And then it went past and I went, oh, that was a new Defender.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it?
It's a personal thing. I'm an idiot. Don't listen to me. It's just, is it a Defender?
Well.
Do you understand what I mean? I do.
I think, frustratingly, you see all these other brands that you've just mentioned, Ford, Toyota,
Bronco,
Tetra, the Jimny even.
Yeah.
It's so recognisable.
Mm.
But, you know, as an overall thing, it is a fantastic vehicle. But, yeah.
I don't think our opinions counted in the slightest when they were developing it. It's not for us, is it?
Well, no, it was. JLR made it very clear they were pushing towards the luxury market.
Yeah,
which is basically what.
Yeah, exactly.
You look at the huge percentage of that shape Land Rover that's sold in HSE, HSE Lux, whatever spec. Yeah. They're not basic farm / work cars, are they? But yeah, it's interesting.
Finding the right parts for your Land Rover or Range Rover shouldn't be an off-road challenge. At bmh4x4.com, we've built a smarter way to get you back on track. Our new website is now live, the simple, fast and reliable way to find the parts and accessories you need. Supplying quality parts for Defender 1983 to 2016, Discovery 1, 2, 3 and 4, Range Rover Sport 2005 to 2013 with Range Rover P38A and L322 coming soon. All parts are backed by expert knowledge, quick delivery and a 2-year quality guarantee. Visit bmh4x4.com, built by enthusiasts for enthusiasts.
But then again, also, I'm a fan of the offset Disco 5 boot.
Are you?
Because to me, that's exactly the sort of styling cues that should have gone over.
Yes.
So if you look at that, that's a Discovery.
Mm.
That's how they are.
Yeah, you make a good point. And to be honest, I think if more people were offended enough by that, they would have bought the StarTech central number plate.
Why would you spend $3,000 on making it look like a disco sport? That makes no sense.
I have to say, annoyingly, the Discovery is going back on Monday, Land Rover coming to pick it up, but I have properly fallen in love with the Disco 5.
Yeah.
It's a proper car.
Yeah. They are getting better. I know my friends, if you mention Disco 5, they all go, doors? Because apparently the doors are very good at locking you in or locking you out.
Oh, really?
That's a thing.
Okay.
But as we said earlier, the art of buying a car is buying a car that has the least amount of they do that faults.
Yes. You made a great point.
And there are a lot of they do that with Land Rover JLR products, isn't there?
There is, yeah. I think the early Discovery 5s had trouble with the windscreen.
Even my Jag, I had a moment where I bought an XK. And
have you still got it?
No.
Steve would have been very happy about that if he was here. He's a gorgeous, big XK man.
Gorgeous bit of kit it was. And went to it one day and the touchscreen wasn't working. And I took it back to the dealer. And he goes, he said, it's either a new battery or a new body control module. Grand. It's like, this is getting a bit English, this car. And I couldn't get it off the drive. The snow we've had today,
yeah,
I wouldn't have been able to get it off the drive. You just put it in reverse and it just goes...
Yeah, spin up.
Yeah, leave it there.
Yeah. But you've had some other Land Rover dailies in your time.
I have a D2. The D2 was awesome, but it was a truck. I never really bonded with it.
Right.
It went all the way to France and back and never missed a beat. And then the 10 minutes between my house and my unit, the alternator fell off because somebody hadn't put that difficult bolt in.
Okay.
So it had lasted all the way to Paris and back.
Quite well.
But then in 10 minutes from my house to here,
that was it.
Fell off.
The straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah, well, that was better than I think it was. I probably shouldn't have got rid of it, but it was, I didn't bond with it. It was a truck.
Yeah.
Which is a me thing. My P38, love my P. Up there, you can just see an Overfinch front spoiler.
Oh, and yeah.
Epsom green for a P38. I'm hoping to be able to retire on that at some point.
Better than stop.
Because I think they were a grand, if not Mick Simmons bought that. So my P38, we did all the stuff that they do. They do that.
They do that, yeah.
And for a period of time, it was probably the most reliable car I've ever had.
Was it petrol or diesel?
Petrol, 4.6, and it had done something like 140,000, 170,000 on the original engine as well.
Crikey.
It was an awesome bit of kit, just wafting around, especially with the roads as they are now. You'd hit a pothole and it'd go...
Yeah.
You know. But that burst into flames on the drive.
On the drive?
Yeah, so...
I don't know why on the drive was a bit that made me sound surprised.
I had to do a run somewhere. And I was buying the engine for that when it was a 300 TDI. And so I'd got a trailer on with an engine and gearbox and loads of pipes and everything. And for some unknown reason, it burst a pipe. So I managed to get into Oxford services, let it cool down, mackled something out of the 300 TDI plumbing, put a load of coolant in it, water in it, and got home. We were doing my kitchen up at the time.
Right.
And we had to go into town to get something. And I was like, that smell was warm. Why does that smell hot? So I popped the bonnet and we went in and doing what we were doing in the kitchen and everything. And all of a sudden I heard this, ooh, bloody hell was that? I looked out the bay window, Range Rover properly on fire.
Oh, no.
And I think it was when I opened the bonnet, I'd let maybe more oxygen to it or whatever. But it was the warmth was either the air suspension pipes.
Right.
Or the LPG pipes.
Right.
Going whoomp.
Not ideal.
So I put it out and I was doing damage limitation and everything, and all the underlining was burnt, and obviously these pipes were melted and everything, but I was still trying to, you know, work out what I was going to do to fix it and everything. And then we noticed the carpet was red hot.
Oh, right.
So we put the hose pipe in the footwells, and within about 10 minutes, the carpet had dried out and the underlay was on fire on the inside.
Oh.
So then I had to put hose pipes in the dash, in the vents, up behind the dash. And at that moment, I'd thought it had gone. That's it, now it's gone.
Yeah.
You know. But anyway, it was the gearbox overheating, aerosoling out the dipstick, which is above the left-hand bank of manifold.
So it's just hosing out.
Which has that, what do you call it? It's almost like... the stuff that doesn't burn.
Like a heat shield, right?
Yeah, there's a heat shield with like asbestos in it.
Right.
Which doesn't burn, but acts as a really good wick for ATF.
Okay.
And again, yeah, so I brought that up with Mick Loughran over Loughran's, and he just went, yeah, they do that. And apparently it was a common...
Was it?
It was quite a common thing for P38, or NAS 90s.
Really?
But the NAS 90, the dipstick was on the other side.
Right. Oh, crikey. That's not something I've ever heard of.
Yeah. Well, they do that.
Well, they do that. Yeah. They, yeah,
I think, I don't know why it didn't set off gearbox warnings or whatever, but
crikey,
it did it. And I missed that car. That P38 was...
So was that the end of it then?
Oh, yeah, it went.
Yeah, right. Oh.
So, yeah, I've had a few...
Sad end, really.
Land Rover products.
Your L322 was cool.
So, yeah, that was an 02... Was it a 4.4 BMW?
Yeah.
The M62, something like that. Yeah, that was a lot of fun, especially when you turn the traction control off. But yeah, that owes me nothing. I've still got it, but it's...
Alveston red, isn't it?
Is
it
silver.
Red? Oh, silver?
No, that the red one was...
Did you have a red one?
Simon Davis had a red one.
Oh.
Which I will argue that it was resprayed, but he's adamant that it was a factory colour.
Right, okay.
But I never... It's like postbox red.
Oh, I must be thinking of a different one.
Yeah, he must have been here,
red, but
Mr. Simon Davis, yeah.
Oh.
So, but it's rusty in the rear wheel arches. It's leaking electricity somewhere. We can't find it.
I think they do both qualify as they do that, unfortunately.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Especially
yeah.
Now.
We had a flood down here, and somebody who will remain nameless, me. drove it in the flood and had the headlights underwater, and it's now the water pump's noisy.
Right.
And it's just, it's like, it's, I think We Buy Any Car offered me $1,000. And I'm like, do I want to throw any money off it? You know, I've got like a stack of receipts, as you do. It's had the same engine, but it's had 2 gearboxes, 4 radiators. I think it's...
Has it had a... Because on those early ones, the alternators were water-cooled on them.
Did that.
Did you?
It did the alternator at 80,000. Had a replacement alternator, which is still the one that's in it.
Really?
So the second one did 130,000.
Yeah, that was a strange design, I thought. But
yeah.
There you go.
Yes. Yeah.
BMW know best.
Yeah, I mean... For anyone that has an early L322, if they don't know already, buy BMW bits.
Because they're cheaper?
They're cheaper.
Right.
Even the mirror glass, the wing mirror glass on the early ones was an X5 mirror glass. 20 quid from JLR, tenner from BMW.
There you go. There you go.
What did I have go on it as well? Central locking modules.
Oh, right.
But that was a wire we found, but they're all BMW. It's like you turn them over and it's got BMW on it.
We touched on this actually in last week's podcast. I was basically saying where BMW bought Land Rover and basically pulled all the money out of the Range Rover L322 and spent it all on the X5, which is why the front diffs and things like that were questionable on the L322, even though they were exactly the same tarp.
I didn't realise that. Is it BMW diff then?
Shares a lot with the X5, yeah.
Oh, it's practically an X5 in a body kit.
But they penny pinched a lot on the Range Rover and
really?
Didn't on the X5, but
did not know that.
Yeah,
loved it. And so I've got a Land Cruiser as well. That's what I'm using most of the time now. But and you'd be in the Land Cruiser, which is on springs, not the hydro elastic whatever it is suspension. And you'd be in the Land Cruiser and you'd be like, I don't know why I don't drive the Range Rover more.
Right.
Because the Land Cruiser is a truck.
Yeah.
It bangs around and it's a truck. And you'd get in the Range Rover and you'd go, oh, I should be driving this more. You know, it'd be wafting everywhere. But then all of a sudden you'd get somewhere, bing, low coolant. And, oh, you know, that's why.
You soon remember why.
That's why.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's good.
But as I said, it's got a sword of Damocles over it, but I might do the rust and give it a bit of a TLC things. It just seems to be, I know people scrap them. And as I said, I know I'd take 500 quid for it, but that's a lot of car.
That's the thing.
That's a lot of car.
Yeah. They do get under your skin. Well, especially
massively.
Once, you know, when they give you so many years of service.
Well, we've said about this so many times, you know, the whole, a Land Rover with its quirks, and they do that fault, is going to be more endearing. It's like Clarkson said, it's more human,
yeah,
because it has faults. And they do get under your skin. You know, who in their right mind's got a D3? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? I mean, again, a friend of mine's wife had one, and it was a stalwart, brilliant bit of kit. But if you was an alien and you'd sort of landed and you looked at all the things that they do, body off for a 50 quid exhaust pipe.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it doesn't really make sense, but it does.
Because when it's working, it's so good.
So endearing. The ergonomics, you know, are just unbelievable. But I will say, the Land Cruiser is also, but for similar but completely different reasons.
Okay.
In the fact that it's like an old friend, it's just going to work.
Mm. Yeah.
It doesn't have faults and endearing faults. It's just
pure reliability.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I do understand. And actually, I think more people than I'd like to admit that are in the Land Rover scene also own Land Cruisers.
Why wouldn't you? Why would... I mean, like I said, I'm a massive Land Rover fan. But other brands are available.
Yeah. Doesn't make you any less of it.
No, exactly.
I know what you're saying. But I don't know. It's just so nice to be back here, Drew, and having a look round. And like I say, I'll snap a few pictures and we'll put it on.
So thank you, Mara.
See what we're talking about.
Always a pleasure.
Well, as I say, thank you very much for having me. I think we're almost... Yeah, I've been yapping for nearly an hour, do you believe?
Is that what you do, an hour?
Flying, generally about an hour.
Good idea.
Yeah.
It's like me. I'm only watching YouTube clips that are 15 minutes long.
Yeah, it's about a sweet spot, isn't it? Talking of YouTube, if you haven't already checked out the build off-road course build videos of me and Steve putting together the new off-road course for the LRM Fest.
Is that a show. Hint? Is that a hint? You want that, do you? Or do you want that?
Hey, you bring whatever you want, Drew.
What if Danny Cartwright wants to tow that with that?
Yes, that makes sense. Do that. Big Land Rover Fest at Newbury. Check them out on the LRM YouTube channel. We'd love you to see what we're putting together for July.
Has it got enough Land Rover in it?
Yeah.
Matt, it's got enough. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah,
all right,
yeah. Bring it along.
It's got Land Rover mirrors.
Oh, yeah. Defend the mirrors. Yeah. We're seeing what else I can spot on it. Defend the mirrors.
Just look for the leaks.
Look for the leaks.
And obviously, we have to mention Lieutenant Dan.
Our good friend Dan at Demand.
Dan at Demand Engineering.
I'm not sure a podcast goes by now where Dan doesn't get a shout out because
he's awesome.
He's a legend, isn't he?
Yeah.
You've got the Demand sticker, and I noticed a lot of the...
He's done nearly every single pipe that wasn't flexible.
Really?
Dan did. Intake, coolant, exhaust.
In fact, it was you I asked when I was building the Turbo Freelander. I said, do you know anyone who does exhaust?
Demand.
And you went, yep, Demand.
Demand.
Go to
Simple.
Demand. Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. And unfortunately, I sold that before I needed it doing. But yeah, top guy. It's good, isn't it? The Land Rover scene generally is full of good people, isn't it?
I love my customers. You know, I still... We've had some issues over the years, usually when the manufacturer tries to do something different with the material. But as far as an unhappy customer is concerned, I still haven't had a mat system back.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I've replaced a couple because they weren't right, but I have never had one where they've gone, this isn't what I wanted. And I do firmly believe that people are different and people are weird. And, you know, there's a lot of spectrum going on in the Land Rover fraternity, and you know, I include myself proudly in that, but the customers are just awesome. We're all kind of in it together.
Yeah,
you know, it's like I explain about fitting the seat box in mine and I'll to series customers, and I'll go, it's not as bad as doing chassis bushes on a series 3.
Yeah.
You know, it's not
all bonded.
We've all done
a mutual pay.
Yes. It's like you when you pulled that out of a barn.
Yeah.
And the bloke that was with you was like, are you sure about this? Yeah. And we're like, yeah, it's easy.
Yeah.
Bit of easy start. Battery, bosh, we'll go to Africa in this.
Might be after a mat kit for that, actually, Drew.
With pleasure, dude.
Yeah.
No, no problem.
Yeah. Oh, I'd like to keep that mostly original.
So that's my point. We're all similar fruitcakes.
That's a very good way of putting it.
I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. But the
you know, and if anyone a Wave, you know, the Land Rover Wave, right? The fact that you could put your bonnet up, you break down,
yeah,
in a Defender or a Series, and you pop the bonnet,
someone will
stop. I guarantee someone will stop.
100%.
You know, I did recently for an old couple, and it done something, and his transfer lever wasn't engaging. He couldn't get high.
Right.
So I was underneath there hitting it and all this sort of stuff. And he said, no, sod it. I'm going back to my son's. I'll leave it there. But yeah, international symbol, bonnet open, someone will stop.
Funny you should mention transfer box lever, because of the first ever winch challenge I had to go out with my friend Mull, you know Mull.
Yeah.
We got there and it was in his green TDI 90, which was all nice spec. And we're getting ready to start. This was with Essex Land Rover Club. Went to put it in low and the grub screw had come loose on the high-low lever and it wouldn't select anything. So yep. We're there crawling underneath it, pulling it apart. But yeah.
That MacGyvering problem solving.
Yeah.
That's why I like the racing. You know, there's a lot of that.
It's great. It's really great. And everyone pulls together when they're needed, don't they? It's just such a nice...
Oh, well, that's... Yeah. Again... I don't want to blow smoke up the Americans' backside, especially nowadays, but that comes from any sort of off-roading, not just Americans, the rock crawling, you know. Nobody wants to see anyone out in the pits, you know. I know of stories where people have took expensive components off dead cars,
yeah,
to give to someone else so they can get going again. And you'd much rather drive over them on the course than let them be out because they broke something.
Sure.
But no. Yeah, so I think it is a good fraternity.
Definitely.
A good gang of people.
It's a good scene to be a part of, certainly, whether you're into motorsport or Land Rovers in general. I think most people are in it for the same reasons and we all try and help each other out.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Well, on that heartwarming note, I think we'll probably...
Thanks for having us, man, and thank you for everyone to listen. I don't know why anyone would want to listen to me waffle, but thank you.
Not at all, no. Thank you for inviting me over again. It's really been good fun.
Pleasure, dude.
Cool. Well, catch up very soon. And subscribe and leave us a review.
Like, subscribe and share, isn't it? Is that what you have to say?
I knew you'd jump on that. buy the magazine as well. Latest issue's out. Joe Hughes, very cool workshop, is on it. He's only up the road from you, I think.
That name rings a bell.
Yeah, he's on YouTube a lot. Does military vehicle restoration.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
He's on the cover, and it's packed with other great stuff. There's
two of them that are proper lunatics firing tanks up. It must be him.
Probably.
Yeah, because they use a lot of D2s for...
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah, jump-starting tanks and things. And
yeah.
I do know who you mean, yeah.
So, yeah, check that out and see you next week.
Yes.
Cheers.
Thank you.